that's right. Yeah, so the topic would be about how do we interpret the world, how do we make sense of the world, how do we feel comfortable with the world? What sort of strategy should we take to understand or to solve some of these hard problems, these issues that come up against us? Are we going to be able to solve big problems scientifically, or is it going to be some other kind of contrast to the scientific method, or even the rational, if I can put that, the rational versus intuition, you know, these different points of view? How is it that we're going to understand the world for what it really is?
I met Jack Layton 2008.
The politician?
Yes, but he was very low key. He was the leader of the NDP federal NDP by 2008. Very low key. But he was over at UBC, the Frederick Wood Theater, you know, for UBC students. Free thing, low key. So the punchline, he tells me you can be too logical. Now I would contend you can't be too logical, but I'll quickly tell you how he got to that punchline. So he was with two other people before the meeting. He said, is there a clock at the end of the auditorium? They want to be looking at my watch, but I want to have the time my talk. So I'm hearing this, there's only two flunkies with him. So I'm saying, well, why don't you put your watch on the extra podium? They tell me I might lose the watch. And I say, well, take a blank sheet of paper, very big letters, say, don't forget the watch, put an arrow, and put the watch right there. So you're not going to forget it. They tell me you can be too logical. Now, I say you can't be too logical. But it's very interesting. He could have said, oh, that's a bit silly. Oh, I don't think that's a reasonable thing to do. But he chose, and I'm about to say, it's too logical. I mean, it could have been a bad idea. I mean, being not had a blank sheet of paper. But the thing that always got me from that is that you can't be too logical, and he was wrong. That's how I feel about it. So I say, ultimately, the funny thing about you are a professor of mathematics. So you're saying, kind of like Jack Layton, oh, well, sometimes you don't need logic. And I think it's a wrong thing because ultimately everything stems from it. So that's what my contention is.
Okay, just to clarify, you say he won't do it because it's too logical? Like, that was the reason why he refused.
He just stopped the conversation. He just said, you can't be too logical. And then he walked over to the auditorium away from it. This is too funky.
So you say there's no limit to the use of logic. I'm not saying that.
It's perfectly understandable. He didn't have the logic to answer your question. He did not have the answer that you're craving. In fact, you're here. I just tell what you're talking. You're looking for the ultimate solution. You're convincing the people because you're logical. He can't accept that, Jack.
I'm not saying I have all the answers.
No, but you're saying that you can accept that the final answer will be logical. We can't get that. You accept that. Get there.
Yeah, I mean, I ultimately
couldn't. That's why you gave me that answer. He can't be that logical. He couldn't admit that there's an ultimate answer. I had the same experience with a guy that wrote Connections, James Burke. Right? I don't know if you heard that about 25 years ago. A series on Connections where he showed how people in different parts of the world working on individual ideas, so somebody put them all together and pulled the gunpowder. Right? Anyway, I saw him at the auditorium at the Orpheum there. And I went up to him, I wanted to talk to him at the end, oh, you can't talk to him, same thing, you know, like, we're just nobody, you gotta be somebody. I stayed around, and at the end, he talked to a few people. So I went up there, talked to him, I said, look, I've got the answer to your question. He said, stop right there, I'm not interested. He said, you're not interested in the answers, no. He says, I make my living asking the questions, and he likewise turned and walked away. And that's the job, that's what we're facing when you do get there.
Just to provide a contrasting point, also just this discussion that just started right now also ties into use of language that you pointed out. And I think, you know, when you're talking about examples like this, context matters and what people mean by the words they're using matters. So when he said in that particular situation that you can be too logical, he may have meant in a particular context that you're using reason more than some kind of either emotional or intuitive type of thought. And just to bring, if we're going to, bring even science into this, there's a lot of neuroscience that's also studying things like that phrase that's being thrown around now for a number of years, emotional intelligence and social intelligence, and what do we mean by those words and how they play a role in how we interact with the world, how we go forward in the world, how we think we can prosper. So I guess it sort of depends on what exactly you mean by, by logic, and I think part of the reason why discussion is important is to kind of get into explanations of what we mean by different things instead of just using a single label, which inherently has a different costs of meanings.
I think possibly Jack Layton was saying that he did agree, because I find myself, if I'm doing something and someone comes along and says, just do it like that, and it's so damned obvious that I haven't seen it, and I will respond by saying, well, that's too logical. In other words, I'm so stupid I couldn't see the logic in it. So again, it's down to language and context, and I wouldn't necessarily say Jack Layton was saying that was too logical. It's too logical for him to see an easy solution to it.
It seems to be a kind of idealized logic too, that we think that we're generating solutions from perfect premises, and the idea that we can absolutely quantify the world in some way and then generate some kind of logic from that position. I don't think there's anything that humans experience or observe or perceive that we can actually characterize as absolute. So even though you can make logical extrapolations from a set of premises, eventually those premises are a little bit vague and things can kind of change. So depending on if you're having conversations in politics or even science, as the premises begin to shift, then you have to start shifting your logic. So I think to that end, if Jack Layton perhaps in this case saying you can be too logical, I think nothing is absolute in the way that humans describe the world. So if you start to try to sort of make a mathematics out of human logic, it's inherently flawed.
The way he phrases it is that the logical reasoning doesn't work unless you know the justified true belief behind those kinds of things. That's never how someone views like feeling, unless we're talking about something or some other sort of fundamental thing about the external world. You're going to have to end up assuming that what we're saying is relatively true or based on whatever is useful to us. That's how we go about it. I feel like no one assumes that it's absolute, unless they're really hardcore about their materialism.
You just got the right answer. No awareness of what it actually means. You said nothing is absolute. Believe it or not, that's actually the key, and that's why it hasn't been gone to. You just said further, if you find the ultimate premise, if everybody can agree on a fundamental premise that does reflect the exact essence of what the universe is, as a foundation that everybody can agree on, then logic will pull it together, and by understanding that logic deduct, then you get the final result that would appeal to everybody, and you're right. So there's two kinds of nothing. I'm going to just quote this up quickly. There's two kinds of nothing. There's a nothing that's not moving, and there's a nothing that is moving. My wife says, how can you say nothing can move? Well, I responded, how can you say nothing isn't moving if there's no physical object there? How can you say nothing is moving? Well, she said, there's nothing to move. But motion is prior. Motion, as a mathematician, if I say 10 miles an hour, I haven't said anything's moving, have I? Have I said anything's moving? No. But that motion of 10 miles an hour is an existing fact. You can't deny it. Now, if you can imagine that the speed of light, okay, the speed is motion itself, without any object moving, is the ultimate essence of the universe that everybody can agree on. The science has proved this, well, the speed of light is constant in all reference frames. But what they don't realize is the light itself shows you the motion of the fact of the light, and it's a motion of a progression of space and time. And that progression manifests two ways, time and space. Now, the space is held relatively stationary by gravity, but time, flies by it, the reverse of a reciprocal relationship. It would be the opposite position. So time you can't hold. No matter what you do, you can't just keep going flying by. That's the reverse of the stationary aspect of space. That's why space is a material aspect of the universe. We're so successful in working. We haven't realized that in motion, the time aspect will also be equally paramount, and that's your consciousness. So that if matter contracts, the space aspect of matter, the space aspect of motion condenses into matter, the time aspect condenses into consciousness. And it's really the evolution of consciousness, not matter. Darwin was right, there is an evolution, but it's not matter. The evolution is the consciousness within the organism that evolves. That consciousness changes, and it expresses as the material result. My actions, my movements, that's a result of the consciousness back.
Well, I'd say consciousness is it's a difficult problem, and probably it's very hard to discuss what exactly that is. But I think what you're saying about the motion of the world and space and time and such things, presupposing that the world is behaving logically, the universe behaves logically. Okay, that's a belief, and that's something that does not have to be true. Okay, the world does not have to behave logically. There's no indication that it is.
See, the funny thing is, with the frame of the paradigm you're looking at, it's perfectly logical that you would come to the conclusion that it doesn't need to be logical.
Okay, yeah, so maybe that's within the box.
There you go. Paradigm, yeah. The whole thing changes. Because it doesn't, I remember just reading recently too, which is true, somebody says a belief, why do we expect a person's belief to change overnight? People vote for the same political party year in and year out, even though they mess up, right? And they have the same religion year in and year out. It's a belief system. They said it's very hard to change a belief system. That's why we're in the problem we're in, but with real knowledge, with logical knowledge, right? If you know that the gun you hold it has a bullet and you're going to pull that trigger, and you didn't know there was a gun, if you have knowledge, you can change instantly.
Well, I'd say that's certainly, you have a point, but that's not going to solve every problem. The logic and rational thought will not solve every problem, I think. If there's more to life, there's more to us than just our irrational thoughts. Things happen irrationally that we don't understand.
I think the to make it more concrete, just what you're mentioning the problems. As problems, we relate to the world as human beings. We don't really relate to the world as machines, even if you wind up deciding that at some level we basically are some type of biological machine. I mean, my background is in maths and sciences, but in terms of interpreting how, but I'm also really passionate about other things too. So the way I relate to the world when I'm not doing work in math and science really does not have much to do with math and science. Maybe with specific problems, I will, I look at particular scientific studies and just what the scientific, evidence and consensus is about certain things, of course. But my human, my relations with other people is not really based on that. And actually, my personal experience, even in, my office, has been that when I try to sometimes convince people with evidence and hard data, they don't really pay that much attention to that. They're not very persuaded by that. And then there's other people in my office who are using more emotional arguments, and they're the ones who get, who get to say, who get the attention and create the inspiration. So this is where you come into this really hard problem, which is one of my favorite topics, climate change that you mentioned, is that it's like such a butting of heads of, science and facts. But then how do you actually influence people to make a decision on something that's such an overwhelming, hard problem? And so how do we relate to the world? It's an interesting question. How do we relate to each other, to our communities? How do we actually do something, in how we perceive and relate to the world that would allow us to solve a problem like that that goes beyond just looking at it simply on, what we know about the science of it?
Well, I think what it is that you don't have all the information. You're forced to be intuitive, or you're emotional, or intuitive, but ideally, it should all be reason and
logical, but you're sometimes forced when you, in the absence of the total information available. For example, I haven't checked it for all, the rule book encyclopedia says medicine is both an art and a science. That's what it said, or it said about 20 years ago when I looked at it. Well, the reason I would say for that is because ideally it should be all science, but because they don't have all of the information, it has to be an art and a science. So a medical doctor, according to that definition, World Book Encyclopedia, would say a medical doctor, that their practice of medicine is art and science. There was an art to it. But the reason being they don't have all the information. A lot of things still in medicine we don't know. So ideally, medicine should be 100% science. But since we don't know everything, it's both art and science.
Well, that's one point of view right there. It can be resolved entirely by logic or rationality, but that's not necessarily has to be the case either. And then even medicine, people, how do you treat sick people? How do you prevent illnesses? I don't believe it's going to be solved by the medical community entirely.
I'm just going to say the reason that they would say it's an art and science is because
someone shutting that block, they devised
it. If it was a science, the same procedure would be successful in all people, and it's not. You could do one procedure to one person as a medical doctor and succeed, and the next person the same procedure and move it. That's why the Mario Barnes one would say it's an art and a science, and you're right, you don't know enough about the science of healing to make a true science.
I wonder if it was even possible to know enough about the complex human body that we would be able to cure a particular ailment. I don't know. So, in fact, you just laughed
at me. Yeah, she had a person. Oh, this one on YouTube. Have you, as we're up so late, have you distinguished between intuitive thought and rational?
It was mentioned in this difference, but we didn't discuss what that actual difference is. What do you think it is?
There can be such a thing as a school of intuition. In the 80s, expert systems were a fad in software development, and they would interview a world expert on difficult things, like an oil well gets jammed, and how do you jam an extremely difficult problem? And so they interviewed at length these world experts. What would you do in the circumstance? The expert would say right away and say, okay, what logical chain of deduction did you rationally arrive at to come to that? And the expert would get really angry and say, well, I'm a world expert, I'm always right, that's the right answer. Get out of my face with these impudent questions about chains of deduction and so on. So it was an unpleasant experience for both sides, but I think what it introduced is that there can be a school of intuition. I noticed when I moved to a new city, red and green stoplights are just apparently random for the first 2 weeks, but after driving around, I developed, without any attempt, an intuition for that light is about to turn red, this light is about to turn green, and it's just through experience, subconscious experience, and so you can make the argument that there is only a hard enough reason of this mindless thought, that your intuition can be schooled through experience. If you really wanted to have a functional MRI, everywhere, then maybe some neuroscientist could have a chain of causality for how you came to that reliable intuition. But it's there, and we experience it as a whole out of the blue. That correct answer just came from nowhere. So it must be illogical and mystical and all of these.
Maybe it's rationality working in the background.
Exactly. It's not at all unconscious. And there really is a side for both methods of thought, I believe, and I think too often we're born with talent in maybe one side and the other. So the primarily rational people, the Mr. Spocks, are always antagonists of the primarily emotional people, the Dr. McCoys, and never
do I say no because the rationality is just getting in one versus the other.
Well, I believe that, but then I also believe that there are people who have pretty much nothing else but emotion. They make their way in the world by screaming louder than anyone else, and they're perfectly happy.
Is that intuition that's different?
So it goes up.
I'm not asking about intuition versus opinion. You're talking about emotional people. Are those different? this walk, and McCoy maybe is a more intuitive person. And I claim that, well, maybe that's just the same manifested differently, where intuition is rationality working in the background, and it comes up spontaneously, you're not aware of it, whereas rationality is something that's in the foreground that you consciously control.
Well, sure. Another good example that appeals to me is they train neural networks to recognize categories of stars, and they also, other people were developing expert systems to apply tons and tons of rules to categorize stars. The neural network did just as well and was much, much faster. So it's handy. Like if you you intuitively know
when it's handy. What's handy?
If you need an answer in a hurry, like if you're deciding whether or not
these are very simple questions, you know, what's the color of this star?
No, it's more like the taxonomy of star categories and so on.
Well, that's still very limited to what a star actually is. It's astronomers built a little table of what the spectrum looks like, and they just say, okay, when you see that pattern, you call. My students do this in class all the time.
Okay.
It's pattern recognition.
It's
real
sure.
Understanding. Yeah. I hope that's not real understanding, real knowledge.
Oh, that's the John Searle Chinese room thing you were talking about, right?
I don't know what that is. But
okay.
It's just an idea.
Yeah. That's when you have all these books of what to do in any of a zillion circumstances. So you look at the circumstance, you do what it says, and that's the right answer, but you don't understand. Like, you're just a machine. And so you say you can have the correct performance with zero understanding.
So I think the whole test, that test of monitoring whether someone has the correct performance is already very limited, not honoring the complexity of a human person. Just looking at very specific responses. Does anybody else have one to chew in on?
Yeah. I would like to share an article from the neurologist how actually human brain develops. As a baby, the first brain that develops in human body is called gut brain. And then the second brain, the second brain that develops in human body is called heart brain, our heart. And the next one, the last one, is called mind brain.
That's what we have now.
So I think that would help us answer like about rationale and intuitive. So actually the first brain that developed is intuitive.
The gut brain.
Yeah, the gut feeling.
I feel it in my gut, that's what we're saying.
So when people think, when like we said, how do we answer certain type of questions, I think as a person we think that, okay, how do I link our heart and mind together? So they said when your heart and your mind are in sync, you will get the best decision.
Best in what sense? Best in what sense?
Best in what sense?
Who measures that?
Who measure that?
You
measure that because you will know, right? When it comes to your decision, you know the best, right?
Okay.
So they said when you try to answer one question, you should not just use your brain to think. It means you should not use just your logic to think to answer that question. You should ask that question to your heart.
Heart is intuition.
No, it's just the logical sort of mind and then the emotional mind.
That's the emotional mind.
Yeah. And the two together.
And is emotional non-irrational? I think it's
what she's talking about, like the heart, that's the emotional mind.
Certainly we're feeling people. We have emotions. I was wondering what would happen if we didn't have emotions. Why do we have emotions anyways? Was there? Okay.
Yeah. I would like to say this, that I don't know what you mean by irrational. First of all, reason is not the same thing as logic. Strictly speaking, it's not the same thing. So, all what here we are talking is rational and not logic at all. And
could you clarify the difference?
Okay, logic is very simple, like in philosophy. There is a subject called logic, based upon, I think, the law of non-contradiction. That means that A is not non-A, just that. And whatever comes from it, that's the logic. So it has nothing to do with the solving problems or solving relationships or anything. So I think that equation should not be there. And I'm saying it because from my own.
But what is reasoning now?
Hello?
Reasoning, he said. Reasoning is different from logic.
Yeah, reason is different from logic.
And what is reason?
And reason is a sort of. It's a social sort of thing. It's not very strictly. It's not something
social and cultural.
Yeah. And what is reasonable in one culture is not reasonable in another culture. And what was thought to be reasonable 50 years ago, now it is not thought reasonable. So that's something what you can hold on to. And then when people say this intuition, I think intuition is, as you said, I think that's my view too. Intuition is a subconscious reason. Subconscious reason. And that is intuition. And intuition comes from experience. Also, when you experience many things consciously, you don't know. But through your subconscious mind makes connections, so then it can predict better about what's going to happen, and you don't think about it. It is just what comes.
Is intuition more reliable? If we can tap into our intuition, that unconscious knowledge, if we can tap into that, would we benefit?
Well, yeah, I think so. Like, that's why it's
valuable knowledge.
More a person is in touch with his subconscious mind, I think more insight he will have, and he will be better harmonized person perhaps.
I have an interesting a little bit anecdotal story. So talking about intuition and rational arguments in mathematics, which is the discipline of mathematics, like you mentioned in logic, it's a very, very clear, clearly defined.
Yeah.
But there's much, much debate going on about what are important problems, what are interesting problems. When they give out a fields prize,
what are
important problems in mathematics, what are interesting, what makes an interesting problem is not, cannot be solved mathematically. That the question of what is an interesting mathematical problem has no mathematical solution. It's the intuition fighting against each other among mathematicians. That's how it's decided. So who gives out the Fields Medal? There's no formula that says this problem is more interesting than this formula.
Yes.
Like this.
Yeah.
I just point that out because you can't separate in the coldest, darkest, most objective of disciplines, you cannot separate the human.
Of course I don't know about mathematics, even 1% of what you know, but from my just high school mathematics, I don't think mathematics is always logical.
Not always logical.
But
logical is
not logical. It is not.
Okay, that's you can have a big fight against that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fine. You wanted to say something for a while.
Yeah. So I go back to what you said regarding how like the loudest, you know, crazy people are being listened to, and like reasonable people who are.
Yeah, I didn't depict them quite that extreme, but. I think it can be a lot more subtle than that. It's just that they just are more persuasive with people using. Anyways,
people are using like an emotional argument, like if you do what I tell you, then you'll be miserable, because you're not miserable, and that's
sure.
It doesn't follow to me. logical reasoning and emotions are not only not mutually exclusive, but they are necessarily interlinked. So something I wouldn't touch on, which is, in order to characterize how I experience emotion or how I experience reasoning, it's like everything that I feel is based on like a causal story. So whether or not we are able to tap into that in our intuition, like you said, where like it's unconscious, things happening in the background. I mean, obviously I don't know everything that goes on in my brain, and I'm sure no one else does either, but whenever I find an emotional argument persuasive, it's because there is a causal story that I buy. And so whether or not I'm susceptible to, you know, logical fallacies that make me feel good, I'm sure that's definitely valid, but I feel like the most persuasive arguments are those that people use in order to make sense, but also make sense because they factor in emotions. So when science and art are considered like pairings together, like the kind you mentioned regarding medicine, the reason I believe that that works is because people have to factor in how they feel in order to reason through the world and in order to make sense of what's going on. So in order to eliminate that factor, not only are we doing ourselves a disservice by doing that, but we also are ignoring a crucial part of reality. We can't escape the fact that we feel things. We can't escape the fact that exactly. And so if we were to ignore that, we'd literally be eliminating a premise in the factors that go into the conclusion. So to me, they're not only not separate, to me, they are the same.
Conversely, I think you mentioned that the reason why emotional arguments are persuasive is because there is a chain of logical implications. So are you suggesting that even emotional motivations or emotional decisions are ultimately logical based?
Yeah.
Do you believe that? So every emotion you have can be unraveled to its logical cause and effect?
I believe so.
Sorry,
there's a
question.
Yeah, I think that's a question for one slightly different direction. So my interest in sense making is about how people develop. So there's a point in my life around 10 years old where I remember feeling like everything suddenly became like this giant knotted ball of string. And I retrospectively realized that that's about the age in like adolescent development, like 10, 11, when you have a greater consciousness of the world around you. So rather than it just being you and the problem that's in front of you, you are suddenly aware of all of these potential problems that you want that you might need to solve in order to progress. And so there was a moment where suddenly I was at the most contentious point in my life because there was the most amount of things I would ever need to wrestle with and the least amount of things that I had gone through the process of somehow making meaningful in my life. So I feel very much like in my own journey, I'm constantly wrestling for more meaning and looking for something that isn't necessarily logical because no one else might buy it and it might not stand up to scrutiny, but allows me to kind of make something meaningful and useful in my day-to-day life so I can apply it and live with it. So what I find in my line of work, kind of using community work, is that whether people would be categorized as a more kind of, what was the solution you used? You talked about people that were critical and more experiential. Whether someone is overtly critical and does this kind of processing, or whether someone is seemingly more experiential and just quite content in it, I find that people reach points where they're looking for that sense of meaning, that sense of
both these moles.
Yeah. They're looking for that sense of where they fit or how they function. And so I suppose my question out is, what wisdom is there to support people in their own wrestle? Because I think it's ultimately subjective and you can't give someone the same conclusion, but I think perhaps there are principles for how to wrestle that allow people to find a conclusion that's meaningful for them. So I guess I'm just interested in people's opinions on what's a good way to wrestle with logic, meaning, rationality, and things, so that whatever is out in this kind of intangible sphere, when it's a person who's facing a situation in their life, whatever age or whatever stage of their journey, when they are dislocated from their own sense of meaning, how can we talk about that? Because you talked about language. And an expression I've heard in the last year that I've never heard before is, well, we didn't yet have the language for it. So within the field of like social action, social justice, even community work, there's a stream of people that are starting to use this expression. Well, we need a language for that. And it's like language is the precursor. So what words are people using that they found helpful to help other people unlock or relax wisdom? Yeah. I don't know if there's any wisdom in the room, but if there is, or even just reflections on that, I'd love to hear it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wisdom, yeah, that's. Well, just the other day I was talking with my friends. Where are all the wise people? Where is the one? What does it mean to be a wise person?
Oh, the cafe.
Yeah, no. Just have a simple question. I'm just wondering, there's the rational, logical, and intuitive, and then brought up the word wisdom. Are we born with all these things, or born with the potential of being wise? That's another big question. Does that tie into what the lady was asking of us? She was asking how we as individuals come to acquire what we think is wisdom and helps us make decisions. Is that sort of
yeah, I think it's just how we helped, this idea of wrestling, because I think that's the thing that, you know, whether it's...
Do you call that wisdom?
I don't know, because, you know, we talked about head and heart in different places, and for me, I think I associate wisdom as kind of a heart thing, as knowledge and a head thing, so there's a, so I wouldn't necessarily be able to say that as a blanket, but it's just how we help each other with that wrestling, whatever it is that's happening.
Yeah, reason was described earlier as, you know, just social and cultural influence, but intuition is something that so it is like something that you're born with. It's not so I mean, the whole development of how kids behave, if you watch how kids behave closely, imagine how they're thinking. If you can imagine how you were thinking back when you were a kid, how was your interaction with the world changed. Maybe kids are more intuitive. That might be one way to describe them. I don't know. I'm not trying to answer your question, but that is an interesting question. A lot of this is about definitions, right? A lot of philosophy is about what do you mean by this word and that word. And that's the language issue, too. We take a lot of things for granted. When people are talking, I could be talking to you and Michelle's listening, but she's probably hearing something completely different, right? Yes. So your question, what is intuition? And then like I'm saying, we have to define it properly, but then we're putting ourselves into that box where things have to be good, kind of more logical, right? We apply the method. Whereas, go back to the cave painters at the beginning. If you could speak their language and ask them, oh, what are you doing? That's a nice bit. They don't even know what you're saying. They don't even know what that meant, probably, I'd say. I don't know how I would put it. I mean, language is a limitation of some sort.
I was wondering if we could talk about how these big massive paradigm shifts have happened over time and how did they happen?
Like, how did they happen?
Or can we say, like, with the invention of the computer, that there was a paradigm shift?
Paradigms probably take a while to appear. But I mean, big ones, I guess, in the science, how about the scientific? That started the paradigm shift, the scientific method, say, rather than computer system.
The paradigm shift happens because you get so much evidence that the way you thought doesn't make any sense anymore in the world, that you're looking for an answer, a formula, or an explanation that makes more sense for the experiences you have. And when you find one, that becomes a new paradigm.
And then, but we should think much more rationally or scientifically, maybe like the lady was mentioned about wisdom. Maybe it's a shift in what we consider to be wisdom now, or real knowledge. So there was something lacking at the beginning that the scientific revolution provided. Or maybe now it's time, maybe the scientific revolution now in its maturity is reaching its limit of how we can satisfy.
That's the time for a new paradigm.
So, yeah, but we can talk about that with a new possibility.
I don't know if this helps, but as it were, you're asking, I think there are some people that your problem never occurs to or occurs in their lifetime.
Yes.
And what you're saying about the emotional argument, how it's really a train, there's a train of thought that you could dig out if you could do that. No, I don't think so. My stereotype for a successful emotional arguer is my sister. I'm probably pretty far over to the rational side, and she always won the argument by simply throwing a tantrum, screaming, here's plenty of levels. My parents always caved into her. I always caved into her. She ruled our household. And she, as far as I can see, carried on for the rest of her life. So I don't think this question of wisdom and knowledge ever occurred to her or ever had to. She was operationally supreme using her, what I call, emotional arguments, huge demonstrations of emotion. Was there any reason behind her? I don't think so. I don't think there had to be. If there was, it was that she saw the important meaning as being, am I winning, am I not winning? And that little Boolean would throw her into a rage or let her end the rage, and that was all she really
needed. Satisfaction. Her satisfaction.
She did display evident satisfaction.
We want to be satisfied, we want to feel comfortable, whether it's conquering the known objective world by understanding it or feeling better emotionally.
And it has a social aspect as well. But like this victory over the people around you, I think, is a big part of your satisfaction.
Okay. The hardest thing I've had to learn in philosophy, so help me, I think, made me cringe when I heard it. The person with greater knowledge has to yield to the one with less knowledge, and that's what you had to do in your sister's case. And the supreme evidence of that the person with greater knowledge has to yield to the one with no knowledge, is when the mother has to feed the screaming baby in the middle of the night or whatever, and be exposed to a predator or something because the baby's crying. It doesn't matter if it's crying, he's in bed. So the mother has to sacrifice her knowledge and wisdom. She'd say to the baby, don't cry now. Maybe there's somebody at the door or something. I don't want you to cry. We could be in jeopardy, but it doesn't matter. She has to feed that child. So the person with greater knowledge in our society actually has to keep quiet until there is somebody around where there's an environment that idea can be expressed. Otherwise, it just wraps up. I had this problem with my own son one time. He challenged me to the point when he's 10 or 12 years old. I want him to do something, right? He basically said, I'm not doing it, you're going to have to kill me. And basically, that was that big a deal. And I had to stop and say, yeah, okay, just don't hurt anyone else. You know what I mean? So you have to step in to inferior knowledge in order to keep the peace.
Now, if I don't get an answer, you're basically, you know that your knowledge is right in that answer. But
that's right.
This is just, you haven't changed your mind. You haven't said he's right and I'm wrong, but just let him have his way because it's a tantrum. It has nothing to do with logic.
The logic is that my son, I'm not going to do it. Right? Imagine if a son pushing his dad to say, you're going to have to kill me before I do it, and yet it was in his best interest.
You don't have to win the argument.
Huh?
You don't have to win the argument. You still know what's...
I know, but the point is that he could not benefit of my knowledge because of his attitude, and until such time as his attitude, I had to let him another day. I had to acquiesce, okay, you're running the show.
That's being given. Or be humble sometimes.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just a slightly different perspective on this point that's being brought up. Let's not forget that a lot of these emotional reactions that we have, and a lot of our human behavior, you can argue, is coming from evolutionary biology. A lot, there's a big meta-analysis that came out. It's pretty much split down the middle between nature and nurture. Like all of our traits. So a good component is, it can be tied to our genes, other components can be tied to environment. But so you can say that there's a certain logic probably to a lot of these emotional characteristics and things that are happening because evolution decided that this was in our best interest to have these emotions. So it becomes a lot more complicated than just looking at it, from a simple almost like a cold logical point of view, because I mean the world, the universe is a messy place to begin with, so it can become difficult to sort of assess at what point you decide what is logical and what's not logical.
That's the way they, our brains have been functioning, the way our brain functions. It tells us how we're a slave to that.
I don't know if it's perfect, though. They give the examples like our taste. If you get a really, most poisonous berries are hard. Not that I looked at what makes poisonous. So it's bitter and it's hard. It's poison. So usually, so that feels good. We want something sweet. But then it's like, then because we've got access to sweet things, it's almost the healthiest things that we're attracted to. So that's where the intuition, where our taste buds, it works to a degree, but doesn't work ideally. Like, it would have us liking a lot of junk, but it takes us away from something that would be utterly, obviously poisonous. But then it's working that way, but doesn't work totally logically.
I do have a brother who was both illogical and one all the time. Bitter, bitter feeling, but I'm sure it'll all go away one day. to me, what I meant was that there is a causal story behind fantasy. Not necessarily that they would be true for you or me or anyone else, but like how I would picture the logic to be in the case of our siblings would be what is going on, I don't like. Value me shutting up more than you value, justice or whatever it will be. Therefore, I'm going to scream, and hopefully, you're going to, listen to me. And of course, the person who's deciding whether or not this is going to end one way or another says, you are going to scream, I value that you don't scream, and therefore. So that's sort of like what I meant. Not to say that everyone's screaming, maybe it will be, or whatever it would be. Like, I feel like the logical reasoning is there. It's just, we would never use it. Because we would have to factor in empathy and other people and what we think is reasonable, which is how we said what is reason and logic, might not be the same way we are to
it. Certainly, yeah, that's where when you take sociology into events, you can look at it from one step above and see all these social pluses and minuses interacting, and then sort of get a logical problem, which is wonderfully satisfying for a logical person. But you have to do it on your own time and not present that to the emotional person. To show that this is a wider thing, I'm pretty sure it was in 1980, we used to have pamphlets for management training courses, and this one was about how to deal with problem employees in the workplace. And one category of problem employee was what they called the bulldozer. They said the bulldozer always has all kinds of logical facts and logical deductions and sensible arguments about why things should go their way. And I'll never forget the line after that. It said, the most infuriating thing about these people is that they almost always turn out to be right. And so then what the course is going to teach you about these people is how to short-circuit them. They give the example of pretend to solicit their opinion and pretend to listen to them.
That's
so
terrible.
Well, for my opinion, that's why I never became a very high-ranking manager. I'm just not of that mindset. So I think it's a bigger deal than just dysfunctional family dynamics. I think that there's a huge market for irrationality as a virtue in the eyes of those people who either have no capacity for irrationality or that just is their innate dispositions and they have no need to change. Oh, and as another answer to your question, the wealth of Pendrell was poking around people's brains doing electrical stimulation. One of the things he got them to say was, yes, this is it, this is the ultimate meaning of everything. It was just brain stimulation, like a spark, and I think it was the medial cortical bundle. Anyhow, so some people are built in to have that epiphany, and it's probably the maximum of smaller epiphanies when we scratch our heads and then we're all, now I understand the meaning of this problem, which is on a small scale, but you're lighting that, not the dead up a bit. So maybe it's just that area, and it's just operational.
I feel like it's the positive reinforcement. It's not that they don't have logical capacity, it's just they've been rewarded by not using logic that regardless of
the
That would be, yes.
ghosts of rationality, and the logic goes out the window.
There's an interesting thing about epiphany being a thing that was in a place called Mila the Coleman, the person in Versailles or something, as one of the French minister of finance or something, he was going to show the king, he did it, but then he lost his head over his beautiful palace. Anyway, it was there. Just tremendous, stupendous. So anyways, I'm going to get a postcard of this thing to show people, because I want them to have an experience. Like, I thought a small postcard would be all I'll get from this big. So I went up to pay for it, and I noticed it was a bigger one this big, but it was about four times the price. So I was ready to go and get that one, and then I looked up, and there's a big paper. And finally, I didn't buy anything. I think I bought one little card, because unless you're there, you're not going to get the experience anyway, right? But you know, it'd be pretty tough. But talk about epiphany, so that's it. I mean, how many times, I don't know about the rest of you, but bear in my soul here, many times I thought I had, I've got it now, like you said, I can't lose it, and I lost it, and I can't lose it, I lost it. Now I'm quitting, I've got to find it. But there's epiphanies within greater ones, and it's all a relative thing, until you get something that does, I guess, become your life's work or whatever.
But that's a word that often comes up in religious experiences. That's right. People have a religious experience. It comes out of somewhere, and they attribute it to something.
It doesn't need to be religious to be
well. No, I won't. I'll just say that it's often in that context.
What's the definition of that?
An epiphany.
Right there. Revelation.
What's the definition of that?
Revelation. Revealed truth.
We all know this. Yeah. Revealed truth. Yeah. Okay. That's probably, it's a Greek word, right? So go ahead.
One of the things I would like to help you to is I believe that there is sufficient evidence now conclusive in my mind that the Iraq War was initiated on the basis of lies. Yet there are so many people now, I believe the evidence and the knowledge is out there and available. There are so many people that choose still not to believe that or subscribe to that. And I'm wondering, what is their brain? What is their process?
Who's they?
Who don't? Who don't? And what?
Who don't subscribe? Who don't subscribe?
Yes, or who don't recognize it? Or
believe in it.
Yes, believe in it.
Well, there's many examples of this. Even climate change is the same kind of problem. You know, lots of evidence has been presented for one way or the other. And a lot of medical studies, the same, one way or the other. Every day you hear about a diet that does this, and then the next day it's the other one. So
I bring up Iraq because I do believe, yes, I think the evidence is clear of climate change. However, there are two camps. I think in terms of Iraq, it was pretty damn clear.
That's a good question. I mean, when people are faced with facts, they don't always, there's always convincing. I think that came up before. You know, there's emotional arguments that will sway people over facts. So, maybe the same
like to know
reason
what,
for that.
What is the basis for that? Yes. I think
the basis is racism
in that particular instance.
So
something that's not logical, that's not rational, that's some other social, cultural, human effect. Yeah, some other human. So same
thing. Right, yeah,
what do you think of the climate change story? You said it's hard for them to change your mind about something. Well, what's his name? The Lord is that old. Do you know who's going to be
Not all the world.
So it's hard for a man to change his mind as well. Mm-hmm. Not an interest in self.
But something is sensible in self-interest.
That's why.
Well, in answer to your question, I was reading this book, and they did an experiment where they put three guys together, and they all thought they were Jesus Christ. And then they all firmly believed that they were Jesus Christ, no matter how much they were told, no, you're not, because you know this. But they, even together and fighting with each other, they still, even though the rational argument was no, you're not, but they still believed they were all Jesus Christ. So I guess my thought on that would be that we're really stuck, I guess, in a certain way, and it's difficult to change what we believe sometimes.
Yeah. work on what a very clear and detailed self-awareness of where your orders are coming from. To be honest with yourself about how you're behaving and why you're behaving. That might help in some situations. It doesn't mean that rationality is going to win out, but you know, I don't know how many people would feel good about themselves saying that this is their motivation came from selfish interests or otherwise. I don't think many people would want to claim that. So maybe in a lot of us there is this kind of self-interest going back to social biology. I mean, where it may be selfish just to survive in the world, but being careful about how this is affecting our behavior might alleviate some of these cases where people will not be convinced even in the face of the facts. It's part of human nature, as well.
I think that the difficulty is it's even more nuanced than that, and that's what makes it such a hard problem, is that even the argument about being selfish, kind of, even when you look at that, you can look at the different sort of circles of social connection that you have, and these are things that are discussed in philosophy too with regard to completely different topics like justice or whatever, you know, the self and then like your inner group and, you know, bigger groups and bigger groups. And it's the same sort of thing. You can talk about this at these different sort of nuanced levels, but even when you're talking about selfish, you know, what that is, well, it could just be that you're trying to protect your group, but which group are you trying to protect? Is it, you know, your close community, your global community? So I think even that question about awareness, which I completely agree with, the importance of awareness and things like concepts like compassion, I've been finding that I'm finding it even more challenging now to even decide what those things are, because it's like, which group am I talking about when I'm talking about compassion, when I'm talking about awareness? And I think there is a struggle about you know, what context I'm thinking about that, and what are there competing interests, and what am I now debating about what's the right and wrong thing to do based on what the competing interests of different groups are. So I find this a very subtle a nuanced problem.
It's admirable that you are considering it.
Yes.
I mean, if most people did that, at least we're mere mortals. I mean, we have lots of flaws, and if we realize that, I think that's to our benefit. It doesn't mean we're ready to become the supreme well-running machines or society, you know, but as long as we realize that these things are there.
Oh, sure. One thing is that the human brains can be programmed, and this is what is done. Programmed, socially programmed. We look at different societies, like Western, Eastern society. What we are talking here mostly is Western scientists, when we have programmed to do that. So governments take good care of us in this regard, to be programmed. They know where this growth comes from, and blowing up the towers, and programming, you see, it's like cognitive dissonance. They have so much programs that they cannot really be in the government can do that. But Eastern tradition is a little bit different because of government, there are too many people, government cannot take care of them. For example, as ladies here said about body, how God's healing and heart. They know from thousands of years that humans do not think with their brains only. The whole body, and we are connected to energy fields. Like Chinese medicine uses it successfully. But Western medicine, they think that basically needle treatment is fraud, but it's not. Because of Chinese medicine, energy medicine, you can actually practice it. I have done it myself. You can practice it, and you can actually feel how it works. You can feel how it works.
Would you consider Chinese medicine as a scientific method?
I would say yes.
Okay.
It's always a cause of effect. It's based on different worldview. And it is 5,000 years old. It is not really, and it has not disappeared as broad. 5,000 years. Even it was, I heard that even it was banned in communist China, away. But they reversed it because of they couldn't drink the traditional people. I may be wrong, but this is what I heard. That they couldn't, and then and now it's back basically. So they use it, and many get that.
What about something like Reiki? Reiki.
It's based on Qi, which is basically your connectedness to an energy field. And your body is basically also energy. You have basically energy points where you have blood and you have heart. Everybody actually can, if somebody has been in love, they can actually, it comes from somewhere and it radiates through your heart. So you have no control over it. So it is how basically heart feeling works. And it really works. You can feel it physically.
But is that scientific or not? To the Western.
I would say it's scientific. I think our model of it depends on what kind of model of universe you're using.
So maybe you should think, is it based on cause and effects? How about that? Rather than scientific, the cause, and there's an effect that becomes from a cause.
Yeah, so I would say it's probably it's working, and it's basically physical, it's energy.
So you're using some of these old scientific terms then?
Yeah. It's energy over there. Nobody knows what energy is, of course. But it's information. Let's say information which you can access to. So
something is just more simple than that. But it works. Just placebos. And like all the placebo effect is something that works without you actually being able to show you the real medicine. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's cool.
And
that.
An effect. Your body changed because you believe something. But not about the physical, but the qigong is something different. It's a different watch. You have that, yeah, I'm sure it's a couple. Just a kind of, you know, what it is. Okay. So it's a different paradigm.
It's even a paradigm, yeah. And also the model of universe now, I think very many actually tilt towards consciousness being part of the universe, like a parameter consciousness. Because of it's consciousness-based models, they explain things like telepathy, things like that, that we are all connected through that
model.
Consciousness, yeah, through that basically super string field or we are all connected, and it basically becomes a holographic models, which are like one model is like a static model, but there is no movement at all, actually. So there is no time, and so there is no matter that doesn't exist.
Would this apply to every living thing, or just humans?
Every living thing.
Every living thing.
Yeah, but it's like consciousness, like basically spread out into.
That reminds me of that gentleman who was offering $1 million to anyone who can predict.
James Randi.
Yeah, James Randi. That offering $1 million to anyone who can make a prediction or do something.
Supernatural, I think.
Yeah, something supernatural, like, yeah, miracles. And
oh, how come a lot of the miracles now? Sign indication of the computer or air travel, right? Like this would be a miracle 500 years ago. This world, everything about it. The best explanation I heard is everything that we call a miracle now is just something we don't understand. And sooner or later, whether it'll happen or not is another question, but in the future we'll know why it could and will happen or won't happen.
So, why did you raise that point? I'm curious why you raised that point.
Well, I raise that point because, you know, well, for example, right, I have a torn meniscus in my knee, and so, you know, do I choose the Chinese medicine way, or do I get some meniscus taken out? And, you know, I mean, so it's looking at, I mean, it's making a decision, right? So when you're making a decision, did you go by, so yeah, I guess that's what. But, like, you know, I look into energy stuff, but then at the same time, well, it's true that, should I believe that? You know, I don't know. And that, which brings up another point about uncertainty. So, because, you know, we have our rational, you know, we can logically choose this and that, but we can't because we don't know the future, so we have to use things like our heart, intuition, other stuff that's not consciously there. But, so that's different. that's another digression, I guess. But yeah.
There's no reason why I shouldn't believe in miracles. It'd be a great science fiction movie that, you know, something happens, you know, all of a sudden a comet appears in the lobby there. You know, is that going to happen? That won't happen. Well, what if it did? I'm satisfied with that. So that would be a miracle. I mean, miracles are like that. They just happen.
You have to believe in whatever it is you're trying to do. You have to set up the image that it could, and in all probability will be true, otherwise you're not going to work for it. It's called like fantasy, right? You do have to have a fantastic image in the beginning, because you've tried all the rest of the stuff that isn't working, so you get a new idea, and that new idea says, that's so crazy, I wonder if it'll work. Well, that's it appears as a fantasy. So work at it, develop it to the theoretical stage, and practically find that it either works or doesn't work. The worse you got it. And if it doesn't, try both. I had a problem one time in my back, and that pretty scary. I didn't know whether I wanted an operation or a chiropractor. Well, I was going along both routes, and finally I stopped the medical and went to the chiropractor. I'm so glad I did anyway, because I got the relief there. The time, right? So what I'd be saying is, like, without prejudicing your body, your mind, your spirit, try both, or you can go both routes to a certain point, but eventually you have to make a decision as to what one you are going to do.
Can I maybe sort of wrap it up, maybe give a little summary? So what do you think, there's many pressing issues facing us in this modern world, locally, globally, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, do you think what ways shall we address these big issues, like climate change or world poverty or overpopulation, or more esoteric topics like what is consciousness? Do you think that there is a way we should approach these big problems based on the ideas that came up here? Does anybody have any suggestions, or does anybody have any hope? Does anybody want to propose that we may be able to do
this? I would like to present a different angle on this. I think it starts with the individual. Instead of thinking how I can help the world. No. Instead of thinking how we can help the world, I should start with what can I do, not we. And then these questions are perhaps not the primary questions.
These big ones, about the primary ones.
Sorry,
the big questions about the primary ones. You said these questions are not the primary ones.
Yes.
These big questions, yeah.
Yeah, okay. These are not the...
Start locally.
Yeah, this is what you start with oneself, with one's own consciousness. And as you were saying, people are full of illusions. Like you gave examples of religious illusion. And similarly, the illusions are not only religious, but social and ideological. Ideology is very much something like religion, psychologically. And they thought, you see, that Walmart was heading to madness. And no matter what system you make, these things will have their poison in it. So, I lecture it already about this thing. I want to see what is true and what is not. And in this way, like people who are talking about this rationality, what you are talking about rationality, this is not logic, I'm very sure. Logic is completely 100% sure thing. There is no perfect. You are talking about how to solve this problem logically, and logic doesn't enter into it. These are questions of, instead of logic, we should say rationality. And rationality is not a very stable thing. In different circumstances and different cultures, it is different. So instead of all that, like if somebody really is sincere, he should do some introspection. Why I want to do that, first of all? Why? Most people are just doing it because they think it's the right thing to do. This is what they need, this is what other people tell them, and so it's like something like sheep.
That's probably a good start. Everybody understands themselves.
Yeah.
And that's according to what they think is the good.
Let's
get themselves.
So I always lay stress on being honest with yourself. I should be honest with myself as much as I can. It is never possible to be completely honest with yourself. Your mind is like that. It will always be playing games, and they will make mental excuses and all this sort of thing. But as much as possible, one should start with oneself is questioning oneself that why I want to do that anyway.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good to me.
You just mentioned short, that kind of works. This sort of perspective that everything could change when we
do. I'm sorry, this
could change. That change could come from inside an individual, but you also have
yes.
to how do you get to the point where you convince other individuals to behave the way that you propose? So you're saying people should be, we all say it should be a certain way, but there's something, some action that has to happen, or some paradigm shift, some cultural or social paradigm shift, where people also behave the way that you want them to.
First of all, I have no right to make people behave and to think that my way is right and I should change people in that way. And the emphasis should not be about, as I just said, about making the world a better place or making society a better place. You should start with your own self. Remove your own illusions, whether it is ideological or whether it is religious or social or whatever. So that is the starting point.
But you're absolutely, from my experience, that's what happened. My life was a mess when I was younger, never mind what it is now. And I just determined I had to change it. I just couldn't stand it. So I looked for ideas that would change my life and make my life, not anybody else's,
yes,
better. Yeah. And I did that, but a strange thing happened. Along the way, the only ideas that made any sense to me, I suddenly realized applied to everybody. And that changed the picture. That's what you're talking about. And I think that's what everybody feels too.
Yeah.
When you get the right idea that solves your problems as an individual, and you're basically already just average, you're decent, you're not too polarized, either too negative or too positive, like you're balanced. Then the ideas you see that make your life better obviously work in everyone else, or they couldn't have worked in your life.
Yes, and when you speak from that place, it has an effect upon you, whether you want to make effect or not. It is automatically effect. And as far as changing your society or sector is concerned, that's like a politics. Politics is full of and will always remain full of nonsense and deception and exploitation. No matter, you see the history of different countries and societies, it has always been like that. It's not a new thing. Politicians have always been power hungry and corrupt, no matter what system.
Oh,
I hope this still holds up.
Did you want to? You go ahead. You had your hand up.
Thank you.
In terms of moving forward, in terms of moving calls, I guess it comes back to what you think, so the language and articulation being able to categorize the movement. I feel like accuracy is so important in terms of understanding what the problem is. If we are to say, you know, like, what is wrong with, you know, like, how we are at, like, how will this affect climate change, why are we here, what is consciousness? If we are able to introspect such that accuracy becomes possible, then we create language necessarily in that way. So what comes to mind is I used to work at the SAC Women's Center, so yes. But for the beginning of my work there, we refer to the LGBT community as LGBT, and by the end of it is LGBTQ+. And we just see, you know, people start adding letters because they want to create a sense of placement for individuals who might not feel that they are represented by an acronym, or people who want to articulate their experience of the world and feel that there isn't language created for that. I feel like language is created through description. So, you know, like a dictionary, one would go, you know, to create a word by use of the other words that we currently know, granted that we have a basic vocabulary. And I feel like this really applies to all problems, where if we are able to think about what it is about something, anything that we like or dislike, that's the only way to move forward. We can't just be like, oh, what is consciousness? Consciousness is an experience I'm just kind of floundering around, being conscious and, you know, being overwhelmed by the fact that I exist. But rather, if you ask yourself, what about consciousness bothers you or doesn't bother you or makes you happy? And that is the only way to solve any problem. That is the way to merge what I was thinking about earlier with regards to intuition and logic, because everything that we do has a causal story. There's a reason that we do it. I really believe that. And if we are to find that causal story, we have to be able to accept that, you know, some things might not be the way we like it, but I truly believe we are unable to lie to ourselves. And I know that's a really contentious and hot topic. I believe that even if something, you know, like, I would love certain things to be true, but the fact is that I truly believe that they are not true. And the sooner that I am able to move around that, the sooner I'm able to be happy and have my life less of a mess I've been looking for. And also for the purposes of the recording, my brother is much better now.
Make sure that's on the transfer recorder. Okay. We're
there's some problems. She didn't mention all that stuff with your sister.
Despite this pessimistic view that human is us
such that there will be always more conflict and jealousy. And this note of optimism here, I guess it starts from the individual. And when we are aware about our behavior, and awareness is a really big word, because to reach an awareness of what we do, what we say, is really it's really hard, because we are carried away all the time by our thoughts, and sometimes we are not aware of what to do. So if we can raise and achieve that awareness of our behavior, we suddenly realize what we are doing and we can correct it. And that's a huge challenge. Like the best philosophers ever, to reach that point of awareness, like they spent years on time to work on it. So when we, in our little efforts, we reach that awareness, I guess that's a good start, because we know we take good care of our behavior and our human feelings. And then a second point, I guess, which is really fundamental, is dialogue, is communication. So when there is dialogue and communication is really very much misunderstood, because communication does not only mean talking and talking and just waiting until the other person stops, because we are eager to express our point of view. But communication is, first of all, understanding what other people are saying, analyzing, and taking into consideration lots of the background of the person who is talking. And then, only then, when we understand that, we can come forward with our point of view. And then we can solve our problems. I'm not saying that we can solve them totally. I don't want to end this meeting with a pessimistic note, but unfortunately, human beings are such that there will be always conflicts and problems. But you can reduce that and with harmoniously with other cultures. And I think that communication is the key to better change and get past our rules and conflicts.
Thanks for that. Yeah, well, on that optimistic note, you did have an optimistic note in the cafe, and I want to thank everybody for coming. It was a very interesting discussion. So it was a difficult topic. What was the topic?
But we're done. But then we have a much more...